Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the T-Voom podcast. My name's Pete, I like pictures. You can find mine, of course, on my blog, which is tvoom.tumblr.com, tvoom.tumblr.com. In this episode, I will be talking about two different things. Number one, I will be talking about copying the style of other people. Of course, my main focus is on photography, but you can apply that to all sorts of arts, right? So is copying really that bad of a thing or not? Maybe there's something to that. I want to explore this thought a bit more in depth in this episode. And I will also be talking about, and I can already say that because I recorded the second part, so everything except for the intro and the outro in advance, so I know what the Wheel of Letters gave me. I will be talking about sharpness. So what is sharpness in photography? How can we achieve sharpness? How can we control sharpness? What does sharpness give our photos? Of course, like with almost all my audio and video productions, the music used in this episode is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, and the song that is playing in the background is called Surf Shimmy, and it is licensed under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. If you want to find me not only on Tumblr, you can do that on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Vortex of Our Mind, and well, you can contact me there as well. The rant. And again, I want to start with one of my biggest pet peeves in photography. I have a lot. I do have a lot of pet peeves. And in this one, it is about copying others. And it might surprise you, or not, depending on how well you think you know me, that I say that copying is nothing bad. There's always, of course, the question how to approach that. I mean, it is not really good manners, right, to really one by one copy another person's work and claiming it is you who had this idea, right? Okay, I have to say one thing. And some of you might know that, and some of you might know that my approach to this, I don't believe in ideas. Sounds weird, I know, but I don't believe in ideas. Maybe that's because I have a million ideas every day. Well, not a million, let's say 100 ideas every day. But an idea is worth nothing, nothing at all, if you can't make it work. I have the idea of curing cancer, but if I can't make it work, then it's worth nothing, right? And let's be honest, there are no new ideas. Not in photography, not anywhere in art. Because everything has been done already. So there's nothing new. The only thing that is new is your approach. And when I say your approach, then I'm not talking about one single thing. I'm talking about your whole body of work. Because one photo says nothing. It's the context. It is about which other kind of photos you have. Why you did that, right? Just today, I'd scrolled down my dash on Tumblr and I saw 10, 12 photos of a photographer that I really adore, or whose work I really adore. I don't know them personally, and I won't say a name. And each and every photo was just simply gorgeous, but they were all the same. Well, not all the same, but was the same subject, was the same way of presenting the subject. And each and every of these shots was technically amazing, was from the mood amazing. But, well, after I saw the second photo of that kind, I was like, yeah, I got it. I've seen it. Why not choose? I mean, I get it. I'm the same way. I have like 15 photos of the same subject, and each and of those 15 photos, I like five really a lot, and even though they're just slightly different. So what I do, I don't say this is the way to do it. I will never say this is the way to do it, but that's how I do it, and that worked for me, or works for me still, is okay, then I'll post one, and I'll keep the others in my archive, or in Lightroom, in a special, I work with smart collections a lot in Lightroom. Very cool thing, by the way, to organize your photography in Lightroom, if you are working with Lightroom. So, and then after some months or something, I will post the next thing, the next photo that, well, it's just a bit different than the one that I posted before. So I don't get bored, because I get bored very easily, right? And I hope that the followers of my blog don't get bored either by seeing the same thing over and over and over again. Of course, I do have something that, a topic on my blog Tivum, and that is mostly landscape photography, nature photography, and that is on that blog because I love to do that, and I rarely post something different than that. But I also think that I have quite some different types of approach of that subject. Yes, there are a lot of trees, right, a lot of landscapes, but I have a couple of ways to present them, and that is because I copied other people or other people's work. In many cases, this wasn't even a conscious decision. I think that is one of these things that we do when we're working creatively, that many things are not done consciously, but subconsciously. We see something and we think, oh, I want to do something like that. Because I also think that this is one of the big misconceptions often, that we see something, we see this is a copy of that. But a copy, if we are very honest, a copy is just doing something the exact same way and doing that consciously. Very often I see a scenery when I'm out there and I have something in my mind how the final photo should look like. And I don't know where that comes from because I'm not a person to document the things out there, right? So I strongly believe that, but that is surely a different topic that we should talk about on a different time, that photography is always an abstraction. There's no photo. There was no photo ever that showed an objective reality. But okay, so I had this feeling, I had this image in my mind, what I want to show. But why is that? That is because I saw things like that before, and they shaped my imagination. They made me see differently. They got me on a new level. They gave me a new perspective to things. So, not everything that looks exactly like something else is really a copy, but an inspiration. It is inspired by. And if we know what it was that inspired us to do something, then yeah, it would be good manners to tell people, like, okay, it is not something that I came up with by myself. But that also happens. It happened a lot with me. I played around with my camera and then later in Lightroom, and I got a result that I came up with all by myself by playing around. And I posted that photo to my Tumblr. And a couple of days later, I saw that same type of approach, even with the same type of subject, already have been made by a different photographer. So clearly, I wasn't copying them, because I came up with the same idea, the same time, almost the same time, but later. Can't be a copy, because Well, they did it first. I didn't see that, even though they did it first. So, and I have to say, though, maybe that sounds like being defensive or something. I was never accused of copying someone. But I saw that a lot with other photographers. They copied them. They copied them. Maybe people accuse me of copying others. I don't know. I never heard something like that. So if you think I'm copying you, then please tell me, because I'll gladly give you, if I see that your work inspired mine, then I'll gladly give you credit. So I have no problem with that. The thing about copying is still, I do believe that even consciously copying another person or another person's work is something good, because we learn the tools. Our cameras. We learn to look, we learn to work with our cameras. But before that, and that is even more important, we learn to see differently. And we start to analyze. I see a photo, and here's something. Okay, I will announce something. One of my favorite landscape photographers on Tumblr, one of them, okay? One, I have a lot. One of them is my friend Denny Bitte, that I was fortunate enough to meet in 2016. We met in Berlin. While I was in Berlin, I met Denny. It was a delight. And I was so much looking forward to that, because I thought we'll be going out because both landscape photographers, and I thought we'll be going out somewhere into nature, taking photos together. We didn't. We went downtown and took photos there. And both of us, Denny doesn't really post anything else than landscapes. He's a great photographer, even with other things. I had a couple of photos from that time on my blog. And but I adore his landscape photography. And Denny has the rare gift, and that might sound sarcastic now, to even make the most mundane shot of waves or clouds, just make these photos so extremely gripping and fascinating that I just sit there with my jaw dropping, and I say, okay, and I'm not allowed to say that word. F you, right? How did you do that? And so I will now announce that if I get the chance to take photos like he does, the same types of topics or subjects, that I will try to copy Danny's work, because I want to know how he does that. And I will not ask him, but I will try to find out how he did that. And I once made a video about, because my friend Angie, noviceatplay.tumblr.com, so novice-at-play.tumblr.com, asked me about one of my landscape shots that I made. And no, not mine, correction, about a landscape shot that, who was it? I think Steph made that, yes. And Angie asked me, which was pretty funny. She asked me, how did she do that? Oh, by the way, all the links in the description. And I said, well, ask her, right? And I asked her then, and she did that in a way that wasn't possible for me, simply because she was for that special effect that this photo had something. She used a certain plugin or something to get that tiny special thing into that photo, and I didn't have that plugin. But I tried to mimic the look, tried to really copy that look with Lightroom only. And I made a video about that, and the link is in the description, of course. So yeah. And I learned a lot, and that was really fun to do, trying to copy someone else's work. And again, I think it's just good manners to admit that if you really copy something. And I learned a lot by doing so, because I really analyzed the shot. I try to find out what it exactly is that makes this photo. From the technical side, what focal length was used? So rather wide angle or rather telephoto-ish, right? Which kind of depth of field did we have? So in therefore, which kind of aperture we need to use to get something like that. Then, of course, composition, very important. The light in the scenery. So I looked for a photo in my Lightroom catalog that matched that, that had the same kind of angle and stuff, that the light was similar, etc., etc., etc. The next thing was then, and that was, of course, the main work. So the next thing was the main work before. So if you really want to copy someone, then it's by far not enough to just drag some sliders in Lightroom. But the next thing was to match what I saw in her photo and in my photo later. So for me, this was an amazing experience to really trying to copy someone. And I will do that with one of your photos, Denny, in case you hear that. But I will give you, of course, credit. Doing that, analyzing other people's work, and even trying to recreate these things will push you out of your own comfort zone. How often did you catch yourself doing the same thing over and over and over and over again? I catch myself a lot. Well, sometimes it's just, okay, that's what I do. And I do that because I love that. So it's nothing bad with that, doing the same things over and over again. But, well, if we want to grow, if we want to learn, if we want to do things differently, if we want to expand, then sometimes it is a good idea to do things in a completely different way than we would normally do these things. So, for example, if you, like me lately, mostly shoot wide angle with a very deep depth of field, use a different lens. Telephoto lens, shallow depth of field, and try what you can find, and I really say find, by using that. I had a very fascinating conversation lately about writing with Natalie Kailrivia. I don't know how to pronounce that. And she said that she heard, and I forgot the name, from someone else. And I really thought this was a brilliant thing. If it was about writing, because we talked about writing. I write mostly in English, which is kind of weird. I don't even know why I do that, because I'm not a native speaker, but most of my short stories, poems, etc., I write in English. And she said that the text will dictate the form, something like that. This is rephrased. So the text will tell you how to write it. And the same thing, I think, is true for photography. The photo itself, the scenery, what you have in mind, will tell you how to do that, will guide you how to do that. And that's where, and now I think I will come to an end, and so this all makes sense. That's where copying comes in really, really handy, because through copying others, through learning how to see others see things, you will expand your toolbox. You will learn new things, and you will be able to do things in a different way. So suddenly you can do things that before you weren't able to. And suddenly you see new things. And that's the value of copying others. And now, tech terms and techniques. Photography from A to Z. Today, S, like sharpness. sharpness is one of these issues that we want to take full control of, right? Just like we want to take full control of unsharpness, because throwing things out of focus or having motion blur or not having motion blur in our photos, that is a creative choice, or can be a creative choice. Actually, it should be a creative choice. When we really take photography serious, everything we do should be a conscious decision. And sometimes a conscious decision that we let accidents happen. The most frustrating thing about photography, at least for me, is always when things do not turn out the way I want them. And I don't know why that is, because I feel that I have lost control over my own photography. And it doesn't really matter whether the outcome is something that I like, that pleases me aesthetically. So I sometimes even just try things out and just play around with stuff and see what happens. But I want to be able to recreate that. So it makes sense to take a closer look at various things, at various factors, and sharpness is definitely one of them. So when does a photo appear to be sharp and crisp and clear? One thing, I mentioned it, of course, is the depth of field. What is in focus? How much is in focus? And that, of course, is dependent on the aperture to a very large extent, but also, at least to a degree, on the focal length. We're going to talk about aperture and depth of field, and all of that is connected with that in a separate episode, definitely, in case the wheel of letters will give me a D for depth of field, right? And as we know, I can't control that. Okay, so depth of field is one thing. Things being in focus or not in focus. And so the accuracy of our focusing skills in case we focus manually, or the accuracy of our autofocus, is of crucial importance. The next thing is motion blur. Do we want to have motion blur in our photos or not? And how to control that? Motion blur, of course, is solely dependent on the shutter speed, the exposure time. So that is the way how we either freeze motion or show motion in our photos. We can freeze moving objects and let them appear to be standing still. And we can do that even with very, very fast moving objects like the rotor blades of a helicopter. If we use a very high shutter speed, a very, very short exposure time, we can show them unblurred or not blurred. That is possible. Or we can show a car that is driving at a full speed and it can appear to be standing still, a person on a bike, whatever. Or we can choose to show motion blur if we want to have a certain dynamic in the photo. So using a slower shutter speed, a longer exposure time. And what goes for objects in front of the camera, of course, goes for the camera itself. If the camera moves, we can also have motion blur in the photo. And that can be something that we want to have. So really, there's one thing to really follow the motion of an object, of a person, so that the person or the object itself appears to be crisp and clear and sharp, but the background is blurred. That demands a bit of practice. Or purposely moving the camera to have more abstract photos. The problem is if we have motion blur that we don't want. If our hands are not steady enough, that happens sometimes. Well, we have good days, we have not so good days. Or when we have to use a very slow shutter speed, a very long exposure time. Tripods to the rescue here. And if we can't use a tripod, maybe we can use a monopod or a bean bag, kind of a bag filled with actual beans, right? Or with sand or something to put our cameras on. Or we can lean against something, or we can put our cameras on something stable like that. So that is all possible. in general, sharpness is how much detail, how much fine detail we see in our photos. So the quality of our lenses come to play in here as well. If we have a really good lens, a really high quality lens, we will have more detail in our photos than if we have a not so good lens, a cheap lens, a lens that doesn't have the optical quality of better lenses. That's what we call better lenses, right? But there's more to that. Sharpness also depends on a lot of other factors like contrast. For example, if we have a low contrast photo, the photo itself won't appear as sharp and crisp and clear as a photo with high contrast. If your subject contrasts heavily with the surroundings, it will appear sharper. And that's why, for example, why photos with a lot of backlighting often look sharper, because we have bright contrast. We have that light, that rim lighting on the subject, and a high contrast between the light and shadow. And that's also the reason why foggy photos don't appear so sharp, because we have a lot of grays in them, so not much contrast. Another thing that might make our photos to look not as sharp is, well, the light. If we have soft light, then everything seems softer. Very simple. And that is something we can actually use, especially in portrait photography. If we use soft light, the skin will look smoother because we don't have these high contrasts, these micro contrasts in the skin. So if we take photos, for example, on an overcast day, everything will look softer than when the sun really beats down without having to go through clouds or fog, right? Another factor for sharpness is, of course, the resolution. And not only when it comes to the amount of megapixels or the size of the film that you're using, but also the output resolution. If we shrink a photo, that appears not as being so extremely sharp in the beginning. And if we really scale it down, it will appear sharper because the contrasts are higher. But does more resolution always mean sharper photos? No, not at all. Because especially in digital photography, if you have more megapixels, it can sometimes lead to more noise in your photo. So noise and grain also can make your photos not look as sharp and crisp and clear as if you have less noise and grain. Trying to shoot with a low ISO, so not having so much noise and grain in your photos, or using a film with a very slow film speed, 100, maybe 200, will give your photos a more crisper and clearer and sharper look. And of course, especially in digital photography, we have sharpening, the process of sharpening. That can happen either inside of the camera or in software like Lightroom, like Photoshop. I personally do not sharpen in camera. Actually, I even turn the camera internal sharpening down completely because I want to have full control over the sharpening. The reason is very, very simple. Digital sharpening, camera sharpening, does only one thing. It enhances the local contrast, meaning on contrast edges, it brightens the brighter edge a bit, and it darkens the darker edge a bit. In the worst case, we have a fringing, a ringing around these contrast edges. So really sometimes really black and white next to each other. And that looks unappealing, at least in my personal view. So I try to do sharpening in post-processing in Lightroom or Photoshop because I see my photo in full resolution. I can really dial in the sharpness exactly the way I want it. There's one thing I forgot to mention when I was talking about stabilization of our cameras with a tripod or a monopod or a beanbag or whatever. Of course, image stabilization with the lens stabilization, so using the camera stabilizer. If you have, some cameras have a built-in stabilization, so they even stabilize unstabilized lenses. Others, especially in my case, I use a Canon DSLR, the stabilization is built in the lens itself. I think Nikon cameras do have, or at least some Nikon cameras do have, a camera stabilization, so it doesn't really matter which kind of lens you put on, you will always have stabilization. And there's one thing that we have to mention, of course, in when talking about stabilization, there's a huge difference between optical stabilization and digital stabilization. While optical stabilization really stabilizes the motion, when we're talking about digital stabilization, what the camera does is to take a photo that is bigger than the photo that we finally will see, and so it just takes a crop out of that. The camera tries to stabilize what it already recorded, and that is never as accurate and never as crisp and clear and sharp as if you have optical stabilization. And that was it for episode number 4 of the T-Room podcast. My name's Pete, I like pictures, and you can find mine, of course, I said it in the intro already, on my blog, tvoom.tumblr.com, tvoom.tumblr.com, and I forgot to mention that, you can find me on YouTube as well, youtube.com/C for channel / T-Room Photography in one word, so TVOOM Photography on YouTube. And yeah, in case you notice the sound difference in this episode, it is because I used a different software. So far I worked with Audacity, which I can really highly recommend. It's a freeware software available for all sorts of platforms, Windows, Mac, Linux, I still don't know how to pronounce it, but while my needs for audio production kind of exceeded what Audacity can give me, so I changed to Cubase AI. It came with my audio device that I've been working with for quite some time right now. In case you're interested in that stuff, it's a Yamaha AG03. It's late, I'm sorry, so I better stop soon. So in case you want to get in touch with me, in case you have questions, if you have suggestions for this podcast, don't hesitate to do so. You can do that either on my blog, tvoom.tumblr.com, of course, and you can do that on Twitter as well. My Twitter handle is Vortex of Our Mind, and you find all the links, of course, in the description. So bye-bye. Till next time.